Welcome back to Weekly Winners. This is our 10th episode. We made it to double digits without getting canceled by the network. And it's a joyous day for us making it to that milestone, but also a somber day as we bid farewell to our sweet prince, Tim Tebow.
I mean, his block wasn't that bad, right?
You know, it's preseason.
Right, just getting the jitters out. Yeah. Hadn't been in the league you know, 5 years or whatever it was. Right. Like,
really puts life in perspective, you know?
Right.
Your own problems don't seem so bad when things like this happen. No, but what were the – I wish I would have seen odds before this, like, that he made a final – the 53-man roster. It wasn't that good.
The only odds I know were the over, under for, like, half a touchdown. The under was, like, minus 200, and the over was, like, plus 350 or something.
Yeah. But, I mean, I guess that's not awful odds for him to make the roster. Like, doesn't mean he could have just been for, like, special teams. Like,
right.
But, yeah, that – again, we got the preseason finally. Couple news stories out of that. Like, got Fields looking good for a half a preseason game, and Bears fans just like
going nuts.
Yeah, an overreaction, as everything is in the preseason.
Yeah,
so what was the quote he said? Like, the game actually felt like slow to him, and that sparked the biggest reaction on social media, especially from former players who will always be quick to defend, no matter the league. That, you know, any young player, they got to go, well, what do you know, you know?
Yeah.
But
it's like when all those old players were like, in today's league, you know, I'd rush for 400 yards a game. Like,
the biggest proprietor of that I can think of is NBA Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah.
Like, everyone kind of like, he's kind of good at it. Like, I enjoyed him on the NBA draft, even though he, after the top 10, he didn't know any of the guys. But, like, yeah, he's, you know, he'll give a commentary, but he'll give a commentary on things he doesn't have any business giving a commentary on. But yeah, that's why people love him.
Yeah.
Only other kind of news story, I saw this just today, so I kind of wanted to touch on it. I don't know how real it is, probably not very, but people thinking about not a salary cap, but a salary floor in the MLB.
That, yeah, I mean, it kind of goes back to, like, I think like episode 3 or 4 or something like that, where I was talking about the Rays and how they're so good for only spending like 60, 70 mil a year. But it's just because their owner is stingy. Like, right. They're always so good, but you wonder, hey, if we go out and get one of these, you know, 30 mil a year guys, are we a World Series champion?
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. And it comes down to, like, the owner's content. Hey, we're making the playoffs every year. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll make a World Series, you know, once a decade, fine by me. Like,
yeah. So the number I saw was 100 million would be the floor.
Which is probably about right. There's probably only about 8 teams under that.
So
right?
I look, there are 12 teams under that. Indians, Orioles, Pirates, Marlins, Rays, Mariners, Royals, Tigers, A's, Diamondbacks, Rangers, and Brewers. Brewers are just under it. They are the, you know, the closest.
Do you know how many of those are like 90 and above though?
Not that many. Oh, probably just the Brewers, Rangers, okay. And maybe the Diamondbacks are in that range. But the league average right now is 130 mil, which shows you how carried it is by that top. If you can have almost half the league under 100 mil and still have the average be at 130. I mean, the Dodgers spend double that.
I was going to say.
They're spending $250 million this year on.
The Yankees aren't far behind. They were over 200. I mean.
And the Astros are just under 200, I believe. So, I mean, it's not even like that much of a fix. Like, you could force these owners to actually start to spend a little bit. Like, that would raise the Indian salary by so much. And they'd still be getting outspent by like 250%.
See, I don't hate that. I think a better fix would almost be like just making the luxury tax like crazy expensive.
It's a step in the right direction. It's just, it's crazy that like, is it just because it's like baseball so old? Like fans don't really care that much.
Right.
Like if an NBA team came, like left like 40 million of the salary cap just unspent, like the uproar out of the fans and the media, like that would be unheard of. But the Rays do it every year.
Right. And that's if a team, you know, doesn't even make the playoffs.
Right.
Where in baseball, you can have a team spend 70 mil a year losing the World Series. And it's like, oh,
right.
You know, that's fine.
It's like money's more of an asset in basketball, where there are like, you know, you can actually accumulate assets by taking on bad contracts. So at the very least, you should be doing that with the, if you're not going to spend your money on good players. But
yeah.
Yeah, it's a, don't get me wrong, it's a step in the right direction. I'd like it to happen if the other option is just nothing, but I think there's more that could be done.
Right. I mean, I guess baseball, I guess the farm system probably plays into it too with the fans, because it's like, you know, let's say, you know, Mike Trout back playing AAA ball,
mm-hmm.
you know, when he's 19, 20, and they're like, oh, this kid's a stud, like, maybe needs a year yet. Well, they don't want their team to go out and spend $30 million on, you know, another outfielder. Because right. It's like, well, in a year, Trout's ready. You know, so the farm system might play a little into that as well, where it's like every fan of teams is just so optimistic about their team's farm system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every fan has like four or five guys in the farm system they can rattle off and be like, it's going to be like household name in 2 years. Like,
right. You have, but like, especially with how they control players' rights in the MLB, like, that's not like in the NBA where you have like a Luka where it's like, you knew year one, this guy's going to be a max guy. So you have to like start preparing. You can't spend that money because Luka is going to get, you know, a 300% raise in 4 years.
Right.
With how long you can control guys for cheap in the MLB, you have way longer to, and also there's no cap. Like, you, there's not really an excuse for not paying, for letting a really good prospect get away.
Yeah.
In the MLB. While we're kind of on the schedule, on the topic, I saw this tweet yesterday that just kind of in the realm that I wanted to bring up. Jeff Passan from ESPN tweeted this out. It was an article, but this was the, what would you do if he was commissioner for the day? He's got eight things. I want to see how many for eight do you think he goes and his changes he would make as...
Like how many I agree with?
Yeah.
Okay.
One, shorten the season. Two, expand and realign. Three, pitch clock. Four, robot umps. Five, end blackouts. Six, trade draft picks. Seven, pay minor leaguers more. And eight, change the commissioner role. I've said that last one's pretty vague, but
yeah, I'll touch on the first seven.
Mm-hmm.
The last one's kind of hard. So salary of minor league players.
I mean that's an easy one to, people aren't going to, like, who's not going to support that.
Right. But my thing is, like, if I was an owner of a team,
mm-hmm.
I would want to. Well, no, I guess, sorry. Minor league salaries are capped. You can only pay minor leaguers so much. So true. It should be raised. Because if I'm an owner, I want to pay them a livable wage, because some of those guys are making $10,000 a year.
It's so little.
Like, I want to pay them a livable wage, because right now you have guys in your farm system that are working at McDonald's on the side.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, I want them playing baseball
right
all day every day.
Even more than that, like, you're probably hoping they're working at McDonald's. You're not, you don't want them in the winter, they're like in the factory, like,
right,
all of a sudden blow your back out or something.
Right. Yeah, so salaries, definitely agree with. I forgot that it was a set standard.
Yeah.
And then shorten the season, I'm not four, because it's like there's just such a hype around spring training, and there's such a hype around October baseball, mm-hmm. where do you shorten, the front or the back?
Right.
Like, I understand, like, they start spring training in, like, end of February. So I guess you could bump that to, like, March, mm-hmm. early April even. But I don't know. It's just, it's not like you have guys, you know, having season-ending injuries left and right.
Yeah, my question, like, is, for what? Right. Like, is it because of injuries? Because then if you're like, oh, guys, you know, playing this much, this often, you know, is makes them more prone to get injuries, then I think the target should be double headers rather than the overall length of a season.
Right.
So it's like, I don't, what's.
And maybe that's what he means. Is it just maybe to give he means double headers over half the days, right, instead of, you know, seven inning double headers. Mm-hmm. I don't.
Is shorten the season playing 140 games over the same time period, or is it playing 140 games at the same pace just to give them a longer break?
Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Pitch clock that exists, I assume it means just
shorting it more. I don't, it's
rarely enforced.
You can't, baseball is just one of those games you can't speed up.
It's slow. Like, it's a slow game. It's always has been.
Always has been, always will be. I mean, but that's pretty much, I mean, most sports too.
Yeah,
like, how would you speed up an NFL game? Those are 3 hours long.
Yeah,
what, you know, never stop the clock at all, like, mm-hmm. I mean, because even if you shorten you know, like the I'm gonna say shot clock, that play clock, you know, let's say you shorten it to like 20 seconds in between plays, well then you're just gonna have more TV timeouts, more, you know, right. It'll get longer,
mm-hmm. That time will get filled by things that aren't.
Right. I don't think there's a way to shorten baseball. Mm-hmm. And I think the extra innings rule is dumb. They should go back. I mean, I don't think there's really any hardcore evidence that's really making games end faster.
Right.
Because you'll see it half of the games that go to extras. It's like, oh, the team up to bat in the top of the 10th, you know, brings in the one guy who started on second, team in the bottom of the 10th does it. Like, mm-hmm. all it takes is two fly balls and that guy's in.
Right. And it's like, there's already the built-in end of games. Like, it gets more likely to end each inning it goes on because of the pitching.
Right.
You don't have your ace closer, oh, look who they're bringing in the 13th. Like, right. No, you're getting down. You're making guys pitch a couple innings that usually – or, you know,
sometimes you're throwing in the shortstop, like,
right? Yeah, that's so, yeah, it's part of baseball. I don't really see the need for it. Robot umps feels like we're headed that way.
I hate it. I think, you know, human error is a part of every sport. I just hate it. You got to live with it. I mean, mm-hmm. you get calls that go your way sometimes, sometimes you don't. It's, but I'd be willing to bet over the course of a season, it probably comes out pretty even in calls that went for and against you, mm-hmm. you know, incorrect ones that umps made.
Right.
Different in football because you only have 16 games. But like when we're talking 162 games, I'm guessing that comes out pretty even.
I mean, it's quite literally part, a very big part of one of your positions in your sport, of a catcher being able to frame the strike zone. Right. Like, your best guy, the guy who in the league who's the best at framing, but, you know, bats 210 and doesn't exactly have the best pop time. Like, he's getting ran on every once in a while, but he can frame. Like, that guy's still very valuable.
Right.
You do this, all of a sudden, his career is over.
Yeah, I don't like that one either. Mm-hmm.
And the last one's kind of trading draft picks.
Love it. No reason not to.
Right.
Yeah. I just think the issue is, like, I wonder if they're worried about how many, you know, trades they're going to have to process because, right. Brewers send their 24th, 36th, 1st, 8th, 10th, like, you know, send like 30 draft picks to the, you know.
Well, I'll tell you why they can't be that worried about that is because players are literally allowed in this league to be traded for themselves because you can just player to be named later. Right. If they're worried about the complicated nature
That's
of processing trades, that wouldn't be a thing. I forget who it was. that got traded for himself, but it's very funny that it happened.
But yeah, I don't see how that or why that's not a rule yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of MLB, we said last week how I was the hottest gambler in the world. Baseball is, I was just seeing the Matrix, those lines. Little bit of a hiccup. I rocketed all the way up to like up 5.5. When I had a 1-4 day yesterday, so I'm back to about up 2 3/4 units. Still up. As long as I'm up, I'll be happy. But both got a couple of picks for you for Thursday today. I'm going Angels and Tigers over 10 plus 128. They're both just trotting out second rate pitchers. I've moved it up a little bit. I believe it was 9 or 9.5. The Diamondbacks really lost me a lot of money over the last couple of days. I kept just betting on the Padres over them, and they kept either beating them or staying in it. But if there's a team that's going to bankrupt me, I'm fine betting that it's going to be the Diamondbacks. So I'm going Phillies -3 at the Diamondbacks plus 170. Bubble's going to pop. I mean, they're not just going to rattle off 9-10 for the Diamondbacks. And I got not that many games tomorrow, so I had to get a little creative. Got Woody on the mound tomorrow for the Brewers. So I got the Cardinals under 2.5 runs as a team. That's plus 120.
All right. Mm-hmm. So I bet Brewers and Cardinals as well. I'm taking the Brewers -3. Haven't done a lot of betting on the home team.
Yeah.
Not a lot of rhyme or reason to it. I don't know. Thought about going 3.5, but at least if I get 3, there's a chance of a push if something goes bad. Yeah. So that clocks in at 185. And then Tigers at home against the Angels. I'm going Tigers -1.5. I think, I mean, they're starting the lesser of two evils, I guess you want to say. That clocks in at plus 205. That game's pretty much a 50-50. I mean, they were both minus odds to win. So. I think
both pitchers have an ERA with a 6 handle starting.
Yeah. And then final game, Astros at the Royals. I took the Royals money line at plus 165. You know, football starting up. You got Mahomes backing them as the owner. And little Mahomes magic in there.
It's no longer, Tom Brady bringing the magic to Tampa Bay.
Although I do have one other bet, which needs to be addressed right now. And I saw, I wish I could credit the guy. I saw a tweet. It was the last time the Bucks won the NBA championship, the Cowboys won the next Super Bowl, and the last time the Suns lost an NBA championship, the Cowboys won the next Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. So Cowboys are a lock.
Oh, yeah.
Betting the house on it. Actually took out a second mortgage. Yeah,
responsibly bet the mortgage on that one.
Yep. Remember, I called the gambling
hotline. 1-800-GAMBLER. But this isn't gambling. This is free money.
Right.
Rolling into the NFL here, kind of our continuing our preseason top tens kind of we've been doing. We did our quarterbacks. We did our running backs. This week we have our wide receivers top 10. As a reminder, this is this year only, 2021. If we are starting a team, what wide receiver would I want this year? And I kind of alluded to this, I think, in our prop-a-palooza on Monday, that I thought he was the best wide receiver in the league. And that's DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he's just done it with two pretty high-level quarterbacks, but doing it with two quarterbacks, I think, is really shows you just pure talent.
Yeah. So I'm actually going to do number 1 and 2 right here, back-to-back. Because there was a little internal debate. I also went D-Hop although he's done it with two high level QBs, he did get Kyler when Kyler was pretty raw. And,
true.
You know, I mean, obviously Kyler over the last 2 years now has developed quite a bit, and assuming he's going to continue to develop, but put him at number one for the same reason over Davante Adams. We've only ever seen him do it with Rodgers, and that's, you know, because these rankings are all about us starting a new team. Like, I'm going to go with the guy who's done it on multiple teams versus, like, I'm confident in saying that Davante Adams would be good on any team in the NFL.
It was definitely a question two, maybe three seasons ago at this point, just too much consistency.
Right.
He would be the touchdowns.
He'd be elite on any team. But personally, if I'm starting a team and I got to pick a wideout, I'm going D-Hop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, exact reasons you're saying is why Devontae is my number two as well. Seems pretty clear. Just the touchdown numbers that he turns in and year out are hard to argue against. But touchdowns, not always the strong suit of my number three, but still the most physically imposing wide receiver in the league. Julio Jones, don't care how many times he's tackled within the five. He still makes catches that shouldn't have any business even grazing his fingertips, and he somehow comes down with it over one, two, three defenders. He's new team, so we'll find out, see what that two-quarterback theory, see if he can keep it going with Tannehill, but I think he will, so he's my favorite. Yeah,
especially because, like, you know, they can't double cover him every play. No, I mean, because you got A.J. Brown lining up on the other side. Like, yeah, you know, I was really thinking about this when I was looking at my rankings earlier. Like, this one will probably have the most, like, variance.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's just so, you know, because there's always three wide receivers on the field at any time. And because I'm going a completely different route. I love the guy. He torched my Packers for years. Thank God he went to the AFC, and it's Stephon Diggs. Yeah. I love Stephon Diggs. He's done it with, you know, Josh Allen but previously, you know, Kirk and
even Case Keenum.
Right. And through all that, he's still produced. Yeah. I mean, if I'm starting a team, that's a guy I would love to have on my roster.
Think there'll be a lot of variance in that bottom five, but I got Diggs four, so we're in lockstep here. Right after Julio. I just don't led the league in receiving last year. It just wasn't quite the heights that I've seen Julio reach, and I think that he can replicate again this year, but yeah, no, he took that step last year for sure.
So my number four is a guy that he's at four because of the leap I think he's gonna take.
Okay.
And that's DK Metcalf.
Wow.
I just think, you know, physical specimen. I mean, we saw that obviously he didn't qualify for the 100 meter.
Right, but
he went out and did it. And I mean, I guess in track terms, he was quite a ways behind first, but you know, when you're talking 2/10 of a second behind, you know, the fastest guy in the world.
He only stood out because of his size, not because he was that much slower than anyone right. else.
I think there'll be another big leap. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts to steal, or if he steals a little more targets from, you know, Lockett. And I think he'll be a force to be reckoned with this year. And saw quite a few glimpses of it last year. So,
Yeah. So my five is a guy I think probably could have qualified in that 100, and that's Tyreek Hill. Obviously, hard to gauge. He's only ever played for the most talented quarterback, you know, maybe ever seen, but still, it's not just speed, which was the perception of him even just a few years ago. But some of the catches he makes are just good no matter where the ball is. Like, there was a clip from training camp where it was like, wait, he's doing this now? Like,
right.
He's not just like torching a guy. He's like doing a little comeback back shoulder down on the hip level in that, like, right at the goal line, like, number five for me.
Yeah.
You know, you could make an argument that's like, well, put him on, you know, the Vikings. Like, would he just be doing what Diggs was doing with the Vikings, or would he, you know, be a little bit less? Because he doesn't have that quarterback who's going to hit him right in the breadbasket lane. You know, he's flying down the field at those speeds, but
it's a chance you're taking.
Yeah. I mean, you don't even need to just throw it. If I want him on my team, and just, you know, those little shovel passes to him. Right. So dangerous in their own right. So
yeah, I think the league will be really scared, and the league's hoping Mecole Hardman doesn't develop into an elite wideout, because he's got a set of wheels on him as well.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
That would just be unfair. So my number five, this is where I'm slotting Julio. To me, I just never understood how a man with his size just couldn't score the football.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like, you'd think the red zone target. Because, I mean, their tight end play is, I mean, obviously early in his career, Tony Gonzalez was there. But, like, I mean, last year, Hayden Hurst was their best. Yeah, I mean,
Hooper for a while.
Right. But it's, you'd think with that size, you know, I just never put two and two together why he's not able to find the end zone more often. So that's why he slots down to number five on my list.
Mm. Number six for me is, this feels like a little bit of jump for him. I feel like he's earned it. It's Allen Robinson. If you're going to kind of build a wide receiver in a lab, I think you'd come close to something like Allen Robinson. Not Julio sized, not like tight end size, but big, fast, strong, very sure-handed. He's, you know, the whole package. And, you know, has performed through some questionable Mitch Trubisky quarterbacking.
Yeah. My number six, I seem to be kind of favoring some younger guys here, because my number six, I'm slotting in Justin Jefferson. I mean, you look against single coverage last year, his rookie year, ranked first in yards per target, and was the number two overall receiver in single coverage as a rookie. Man. And, I mean, that's playing on a Kirk Cousins-led offense. Again, serviceable quarterback, but, you know, what's he doing if he's on Green Bay? What's he doing if he's on Kansas City? I mean, and that might just be me being too optimistic that he's going to have some massive leap in his sophomore year. But even those single coverage stats, I'm totally cool building an offensive wide receiving core again, or with him.
Definitely. Number seven was big question mark. I didn't even know where I would end up putting him at the start of this list, but the facts are the facts. If you two short years ago broke the single season receptions record, you're on my top 10. So Michael Thomas is at seven. Drama, you know, a little bit of trade talks, a little bit of injury, but like, the talent's clearly there. Sure hand, he doesn't drop the ball. He's super athletic, you know. He's put up the best season outside of maybe Julio of guys I've mentioned so far. So he's number seven for me.
Yeah. At my number seven, this is where I am slotting Allen Robinson. Kind of like what you said, just like physically just there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, specimen. Doing it in a Chicago offense that for the last decade has been laughable.
Right. Keeping it to a decade is very generous of you.
Yeah. I guess pretty much since Walter Payton retired.
So number eight is a kind of a risk for me. He's kind of the reason that, not the reason, but the beneficiary of when Julio wouldn't get those touchdowns. I got Calvin Ridley at eight, and I'm going to surprise, surprise, although there's not one on my list, spoiler alert, mention the Steelers here. I think he's in a very similar spot to, let's say, 3 years ago, when the last year of Antonio Brown in Pittsburgh. You would probably guess that this year, Juju would be on this list based on his performance as a rookie in that offense. But when Antonio Brown left and Juju stepped into that wide receiver one role, his stats stayed very much the same and even went down a little bit, despite an increase in targets, because, you know, that's a very different position to be that wide receiver one rather than that two. And he, you know, he's still a very good wide receiver, but not quite what he was or what people thought he would be. Calvin Ridley very much in that same situation right now, with, you know, Julio being gone. I think he's a, you know, little bit better. He's not such a solo focus with them, you know, bringing in, I don't know, I'm blanking on his name, tight end.
Pitts.
Kyle Pitts. So Ridley, obviously the one, but Pitts is a better two than the Steelers had at that time. So he won't have like just total double coverage all the time, but I'm going to bet that he does overcome and can become a very effective wide receiver one.
So my next, we're at eight, right?
I did my, yes.
Okay. So AJ Brown, just another big bodied guy. You feel comfortable throwing the ball up that he's coming down with it. He's been doing it with Tannehill, which again, we both have high respect for Tannehill and his play, but we also both didn't consider him a top 10 quarterback. So, sure. You know, he's been doing it with, you know, I'd say for sure an above average quarterback, but still not that elite level quarterback play.
Do the Titans have the best top three skill position players
in the league? I think so.
I think it's by a lot.
Yeah.
Because
who would compete?
It would have to be the Chiefs. I don't know who that third is, but you do Kelsey and Hill.
Right. I mean.
Yeah, you know, then, you know, Devontae and Aaron Jones, but to find that third is, and when that third is AJ Brown, who, you know, it's very in or close to the top 10.
I mean, it's not really close, but I guess Evans, Godwin, and Antonio Brown, if he plays this year like he did at the end of last year.
Right, yeah.
I still don't really think it's close, but it's got to be up there for one of the big trios.
Yeah, I don't think
the Packers, it's Devontae.
It's Aaron, that third Jones player.
And, you know,
it's the third player where it falls off. Like,
right.
No one's third is going to be as good as AJ Brown is.
Right.
Yep. But so I'm at number nine. This is where I have DK Metcalf.
Okay.
I still think it's a leap for him. He was very good last year. He wasn't top 10 last year. So I still project not quite as much of a jump as you do, but I do see him getting in, cementing himself as a top 10 receiver this year.
I remember what I was gonna say. At my nine, I've made him fall enough, but it's just the fact that I think he's a little bit of a product of Mahomes, and that'd be Tyreek Hill. I mean, again, still top 10, like no real doubt about that, but I'm just not confident on how many other teams he would be produce at nearly the level he is. Because at least once a game, he still is wide open by about 10 yards and he's getting hit for a 50, 60 yard bomb. But like outside of that, I think the fact that Mahomes can put balls where most people can't, I think that's really what makes him put up elite level numbers.
Yeah, I don't think the Chiefs have any plans to let us find out what he would look like without Mahomes. So rounding out my top 10 is another young guy. I put Justin Jefferson in there. I have him taking a leap as well. He just looks really good.
Yeah. And so I had drafted him in my dynasty league. I'm in. And those first like 3 weeks, I'm like, they're not even like playing him. Is he looking that bad in practice? But then I come to find out it was just a grooming process, seeing as they didn't have a preseason. And, you know, by week six, I'm like, all right, I'm loving this kid. Like,
I mean, I have him in the keeper league we're in together. So
yeah,
we're both benefiting from his rookie year.
So my final one is going to be Michael Thomas. Kind of dropped him. I guess it's like, I mean, product of Breeze slash when Breeze's level of play went down, Thomas's kind of did too, which I guess is to be expected. But yeah, I don't, just kind of the whole Saints situation going on, talks. It's like, why would they want to trade him if he was that much of a stud? Like, I don't know. It just kind of culmination of things factored in me.
I think trade would be good for him right now. Like, pretty much anywhere you go, he goes, you would be like, oh, wait a minute. Like, this could be like really good for that team.
Right.
No, but speaking of fantasy, that's a guy who 2 years ago was my number one pick in an inaugural dynasty league. So
you're almost,
I'm hoping, but, yeah,
I wouldn't mind a little trade to the pack.
Sure.
They
can have Khan.
So my most notable one is a guy who I love. And that's Mike Evans. I just couldn't put him on the list. And I don't know if there's just too many guys down there now where he's not like the guy.
Right.
I'm wondering if that's it, where his production's kind of fallen off, but I guess, who do you think your most notable, like a guy I can't believe I didn't put him on there?
I didn't have AJ Brown on mine. He was very good, but, you know, kind of the 1 year, it's, do you believe this is like growth, or is this, you know, just a full overperforming?
Yeah.
Is it a beneficiary of having a team that the defenses have to put 8 guys in a box, 7 guys in a box, because you have a 2,000-yard rusher on your team? But, yeah, I'd rather err on the side, typically, of believing in a guy rather than picking it apart, saying, like, oh, he's a product of this or that. But just not really room on my top 10 form, especially when you look at the first guys off being either, like, DK Metcalf or Justin Jefferson, who I think put up very similar numbers, performances on when they're playing on, you know, worse or similar situations. And because they're younger, I think it's more likely to be, not that AJ Brown is old, but it's more likely to be growth rather than just like, although you never know. Stephon Diggs was always good, but he wasn't really great until this year.
Right.
Which I guess can go to show you maybe sometimes all it takes is a quarterback. So, yeah, probably the top 10 with kind of the most leeway. Like, there's probably 20 guys that you wouldn't really blink at if they're on a top 10 list.
Yeah, I mean, like, you had guys a lot higher than I did, and I had guys a lot higher than you did. But, like, when you said it, I wasn't like, oh, like, that's dumb. You know, like that's a bad take. Like, it just comes down to what you value in a wideout. And I think young guys are more likely to make bigger leaps than those guys who are like 26, 27. And I'm willing to bet on that, which is why I put Metcalf and Jefferson so high.
Right. Like, even if I was like, hey, my number 10 is Robert Woods, and I'll tell you why, he'd be like, interesting choice, but like, well, maybe, like,
right.
So, yeah, that is our episode for this week. We'll come at you on Monday with, you know, more baseball bets, more news stories, kind of still slogging along till football season, but it's preseason. It's only 3 weeks this year. It's, you can almost see the light at the end of the tunnel. We're getting there. Yeah, so thanks for listening, and we will see you guys on Monday.